ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
Well, I hope you're ready for something technical because that's what this morning's class is going to be about. I'm reading consecutively through the Bhagavatam, and I'm right in the middle of Samkhya Yoga, Samkhya philosophy. So that's what we're going to be discussing. And it's Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 39. I'll begin it by the big picture. Set back and back and back, because this gets zoomed in again and in and in, like detail, mind boggling detail. So let's step back, zoom out, in the big picture. Both from the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam and Sri Brahma Samhita, the topic is about Krishna. And Krishna, in the language of the Bhagavatam, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Satyam Param, the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is Janma Yasya Yataha, that from which everything comes. Vedanta Sutra, stating that, the Bhagavatam explains what is that, which is from which everything comes. Krishna. And to have everything come from Krishna has lots and lots of detail. There's expansions of Krishna. There's energies of Krishna. There's the energies of those expansions of Krishna. And those energies that are the expansions of Krishna do all kinds of things in the spiritual world and in the material world. And this is the material world part. Because that's what Maitreya has been asked by Vidura. He's described creation, so he's describing creation. And the beginning of that section is called the Lila. We normally think of Lila as Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. Like this nice painting of Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Lila. Or Damodar Lila, Mother Jasoda binding Krishna. Pastimes of Vrindavan. Or Lilas. Or Ram Lila. No, so pastimes in the internal potency. But there's also the external potency aspect, which Bhagavatam also calls Lila. And as the spiritual Lilas are performed by the interactions and movements of different features of the internal potency by Krishna's arrangement, so similarly the features of the external energies, aspect of creation is done by different potencies of the personality of Godhead or his expansions. And one of those, as an example, because this is like doing the zoom back into the detail, but going somewhere between Krishna is the source of everything, one of the Kala, it's called in the Bhagavatam, an expansion of a portion of a plenary portion. So Balaram, he's plenary. And Balaram expands as the initial Sankarshan, and the Sankarshan Chaturvyuha, and then Narayana, and the second Sankarshan, And from the second Sankarshan, which is called sometimes Maha Sankarshan, comes the Purusha avatars. And they're called Kala, a portion of a finite portion. Not like he's a little guy or something, he's a big guy. But categorically, that's his position. And in a cyclical fashion, cyclical meaning through the movements of time, his time energy, he's situated in eternal time, where past, present, and future are absent. That's eternal time. Time as we know it is conspicuous by its absence, Prabhupada's language. So he's situated with Rama, Devi, enjoying eternal pastimes with Rama. And Rama has her expansion, sometimes identified as a maid servant of Rama, is Prakriti, material energy. And depending upon the state or the condition of Prakriti, different terms are used for nomenclature. So Pradhan, dormant, totality of the material energy, that's a lot of energy, Pradhan. And he glances. And that's it. You know, the whole thing commences because he causes it. He's the remote cause. So then, when he glances, Rama Devi, being his internal potency, understands his ichha, his desire. He wants Rama Devi, he wants his Chaya Devi, his reflection of Rama Devi, to also have something to do. She wants some service. He knows she wants some service, and she's without service, so he just glances with a desire. She should have something to do. So, Rama Devi, she knows how to fulfill the desire of her Lord. So, she takes the living entities that are in a dormant state and carries them, or the verb, transmits them, or entrusts them, along with her time energy, because she has energies, she has sub-energies. So her time energy, which is eternal, in its transformed time, as we know it, kind of time, the living entities in time are then entrusted to the halo of Mahavishnu's glance. The halo is trembled. And zoom, there goes the glance, and the glance contacts Pradhan, and things start to happen. Pradhan then becomes transformed, energized by the jivas and time, and in that agitated state, like in cognition, the agitated condition of the egg of the mother then becomes impregnated, literally, not just figuratively. And so the living entities that were dormant, they're still in a dormant state because the time energy was absent, but now time energy is starting to differentiate out the elements, and you get 24 elements. Well, that's prior parts of this chapter. So now, Brahma Samhita describes, that's now it's Mahatattva, no longer Pradhan. Still the Lord's energy, external energy. And then from his body, there's little golden spiritual seeds, and through his exhalation, those spiritual seeds leave the pores of his body, enter into this vast Mahatattva, and the elements start to cling to those seeds. Golden seeds, they call them. And then each of those elements have their prototype or primordial demigods. Not like the ones that are within the universe, because there's no universe yet. Another primordial or prototype demigods. This is now Canto 3, Chapter 5. The demigods aren't able to cooperate together. They need some jnana, they need some knowledge, how to perform the function. So they pray to Mahavishnu, help! Give us the capacity to do our function, to help you in the creation of universes. Mahavishnu, beginning of chapter 6, canto 3, he acknowledges their prayer. He expands himself into another feature of himself, Shirdakshaya Vishnu, and enters within every particle of matter of its 24 different elements, not just like earth elements, but all elements, along with his combining potency. The language in Brahma Samhita is conglomerate. It's important, I'm going through this because it's important for this verse to understand what's going on. There's Kala is time, but when time acts specifically to combine, that time energy is then called Kali. Not the demigoddess Kali that's within each universe that has 12 arms, or excuse me, 10 arms, and weapons in each of those arms, and all those things. Not her, but the primordial, or prototype, Kali, and she combines. And Shirdakshaya Vishnu gives the knowledge to the demigods how they can work together. So, then the capacity for forming the universe with its layers, and the demigods, primordial demigods, reside in those layers, that's described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, then we're ready to go. There's just one more thing that has to happen, and that's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is extended from Mahavishnu within the hollow of each of those shells of universes. He perspires, he fills up half the universe with Garbhadak water, and then in contemplating the living entities, whoops, when he expands into each universe, he takes with him a portion of the totality of jivas that were injected by the glands of Mahavishnu into the universe, and then now they're within his body, and he wants to see them have activity, because that was the desire of Mahavishnu. So, from his navel comes the sum total of all the karma of all the living entities within each universe, penetrates his navel in the form of the lotus, a first a bud of the lotus. The Bhagavatam describes that as the sum total of the karma of all living entities within the universe. That's a lot of karma. That's what the lotus is. And then on top of the lotus, one of those living entities appears. And that's like the most qualified among them, empowered by Vishnu to create. So Brahma does what Brahma does. He becomes self-realized through processes, and then he begins the process of self-creation. But we're still in the creation part, what Vishnu does. So, with so now we're going to zoom in a little bit. There's the living entities. There's the time energy, and according to Brahma Samhita, corresponds with the Bhagavatam and with the Upanishads, there's parts of the time energy. One is the force of activity, Kriya Shakti, and another is the force of instrumentality, that's Bhakti Siddhanta Thayam's myths, Isha Shakti. The same can't happen without Kriya Shakti and Isha Shakti. And then there's one more, that's Jnana Shakti, which comes from Super Soul. He supplies the intelligence on how to work together, how to get the job done, how to create the product. The product is the universe with its different planetary systems and the living entities of different species populating those planetary systems. It's all happening by the plan of the Lord. So, Krishna's over here. He's the cause of the all causes. That's the message of the Bhagavatam. That's the message of Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Sachidananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakarma. That's Krishna. And then there's expansions of Krishna in the spiritual, and there's expansions of Krishna in the material. Feature of his unlimited energies. And this is like one part of his unlimited energies, the material part. And it's describing, Kapila Dev is describing to Devahuti, and that's because Maitreya is explaining to Vidura, he wants to know about creation, so the way to know about creation is here from Kapila, so he's describing to Devahuti how it all begins. And how this is the sarva part, what Bhagavan Vishnu, as Chiradakshay Vishnu, is making the language of Bhakti Siddhanta is conglomerating. Interesting word. How to get all the different parts working together. There's lots of different parts. Prabhupada uses the metaphor of an automobile factory that has lots of parts before they're assembled. And then there's the assembly of those parts. The assembling of those parts is what Brahma does. The manifesting of those parts is what Vishnu does. And how this part is engineered to connect with that part so you can get an automobile. That's, you know, the intelligence is coming from Vishnu. Brahma connected Vishnu and then he puts it all together. He's the assembler. He's not the creator. He just puts it together. So, now we're getting zooming in a little bit again. And so, the beginning of this chapter has described the 24 elements, and now it's how the 24 elements combine. The conglomerating thing. And it's really sophisticated. If you ever want to create a universe, you have to know this stuff. If you don't want to create a universe, you can still go back to Godhead. This stuff. You're not excluded from going back to Godhead if you don't know how to create a universe again. But, because Krishna is the cause of all causes, and Mahavishnu is assisting Krishna, serving, literally serving Krishna in the aspect of material creation for his sake of his lila of creation. We're hearing about it because he's the cause of all causes. So now there are these terms of the senses and the objects of the senses. The objects of the senses are called tanmatra. And you have the object of the sense without a sense. Well, it's not very intelligent, it doesn't make sense. So you have a sense without the object without the sense of perception, it's incomplete. So there's both, and then how they function isn't just like, you know, there's this motor part and there's that motor part, and they just like somehow get together. There's secondary causal functions of some of the elements that help this motor part and that motor part come together. Cause and effect. And that's what's being described. So I'm going to read two verses before text 39 that help understand text 39. Thirty-seven and 38 are dealing with air. And what air does. The action of the air is exhibited in movements, mixing, allowing approach to the objects of sound and other sense perceptions, and providing for the proper functioning of all the other senses. That's air. So air is an element, and it's helping in, you know, if you want to create a universe, you have to have things. Movement, mixing, allowing approaching to objects according to sound. And so, how do you do that? Here's how you do that. Through the air. Purport. We can perceive the action of the air when the branches of a tree move. You don't see the air. See the action of the air. And so we know the air is there and the air is moving. And it causes objects to move. Or when dry leaves on the ground collect together. That's the mixing. Similarly, it is only by the action of the air that a body moves. The branches in a tree and leaves on the ground. But walking across the floor is possible through air. And that means the converse. If the movement of the air is not proper, you're paralyzed. You can't move. Or other types of diseases. Similarly, it's only by the action of air that a body moves, and when the air circulation is impeded, many diseases result. Paralysis, nervous breakdowns, madness, and many other diseases are actually due to an insufficient circulation of air. In the Ayurvedic system, these diseases are treated on the basis of air circulation. If, from the beginning, one takes care of the process of air circulation, such diseases cannot take place. From the Ayurvedic, as well as from the Bhagavatam, it is clear that so many activities are going on internally and externally because of air alone. And as soon as there is some deficiency in air circulation, these activities cannot take place. I visited an Ayurvedic doctor in January of last year. One of the things that when he wanted me to report my health condition, I told him about edema. I got swelling in my ankles. He said, "Oh." Well, from the Ayurvedic perspective, that's apanavayu. The air that goes down isn't going down. And so you need to do the air going down rejuvenation or invigorating. But that going down is connected with the upper torso also. It's not just like doing aerobic exercises. You move, you know, like riding a bicycle or swimming or something. And the other air is also affect that air. Anyway, without all the details, it's just an example of what Prabhupada is saying. Here it is clearly stated, ne tritvam dravya shabdhayo. Our sense of proprietorship over action, like I'm going to do it, you know, I'm going to get up and walk across the room. Our sense of proprietorship over actions is also due to the activity of the air, or its false ego of its part. If the air circulation is stifled, we cannot approach a place after hearing. Like I hear a sound. The sound says, no. The water is boiling over in the stove. But if air circulation isn't working, I can't get up and attend to that. Or my alarm goes the same way. Air circulation is necessary for responding to a sound. Because that's directly in the allowing approach to the objects of sound, written verse. The prophet's explaining it. If someone calls us, we hear the sound because of the air circulation. Well, we hear it also because there's ether, and ether carries sound, but then, you know, anyway, so air circulation, we hear the sound. The sound is coming to us that way, and we approach that sound or the place from which the sound comes. It is clearly said in this verse that there are all movements of the air, that these are all movements of the air. The ability to detect odors is also due to the action of air. There's something good smelling or bad smelling over the air. But I way over here. But if there's a wind, oh, it smells good, oh, it smells bad. So, detecting objects of the senses, perceiving through the movements of air. That's so. It gets more complex. Here it goes. Next verse. By interactions of the air and the sensations of touch. So the air is the tanmatra, and then there's the sense of touch of the object of that sense. By the interactions of the two, one receives different forms. One receives different forms according to destiny. We have bodies. Of the destiny by the interaction of these two. By evolution of such forms, there is fire. And the eyes see different forms in color. Perform. Because of destiny, the touch sensation, the interactions of air, and the situation of the mind, which is produced of the ethereal element, one receives a body. This is so the previous is before there's even bodies. It's just that the sense of touch and the object, air, the interaction of them produces body or form. Meaning, it's like, you know, there's the ear, the instrument, and then there's the capacity to hear. So if the instrument is bad, you can like fix the instrument, get a hearing aid. Or who knows, they may like find ways to like give you an ear transplant. Just another machine part. You know, your alternator doesn't work, you take it out with another alternator. Generator doesn't work, take the generator out for another generator. Just a machine part. These are machine parts. And then there's the subtle capacity for the sense of touch, and then the object of air, and then comes form, the machine that runs the soul. You're going to hear about it in the next verse, so it's important to appreciate. There's the gross and the subtle aspects of the senses and sense perception. One receives a body according to his previous activities. Needless to say, the living entity transmigrates from one form to another. Not only one lifetime to another lifetime, but even during our lifetime. Little babies become little children, and little children become bigger children, and bigger children, and their bodies are changing. Like the old ones. So, bodies are changing, needless to say. His form changes according to destiny and by the arrangement of a superior authority. That's the demigods that are controlling the thing. The demigods are controlling the thing under the direction of super soul. Otherwise they can't. They don't have the wherewithal to do it. Not independent. Dependent. A superior authority makes the arrangements, which controls the interactions of air and the mental situation. Form is the combination of different types of sense perception. You have different senses and different objects of the senses, and you put them all together, mix them all up with proper supervision, you get a body. You know, the machine. And behind the machine, like, you know, there's the horn. You have to press the horn. Beep, beep. You have to have a person pressing the horn. And, you know, the part of the steering wheel or wherever they put but you wouldn't have the machine, the automobile that has a horn without some intelligence behind it. It doesn't just happen. Right. Predestined activities are the plans of the mental situation and the interactions of air. Wow. Read it again. Predestined activities are the plans of the mental situation and the interaction of air. Of course, you know, it's more complex. There's the sanctioning super soul, obviously, and there's the living entity, obviously, but there's a mind. And the mind has is a repository of I want stuff. And I want it like this, not like that. And so it's desires within the mind, and then the interaction of air. Like, you know, go get the object. Because you can have a desire and be paralyzed. You can't do stuff. And so predestined activities are the plans of the mental situation and the interaction here. So there's the sanctioning super soul who sees, look, this living entity has such and such desires. And they have such and such karma. So good and karma. And, you know, they're entitled to da-da-da-da, whatever that is. They can't get what they want, but they get this. And carried out by the demigods, the sanctioning agents of the Supreme Lord. Okay, as if that wasn't complex enough, here comes this morning's verse. Text 39. My dear mother, the characteristics of form. The previous verse was how you get form. And the verse before that is how the capacity for movement, gathering together, that's there. Then the form comes, and there's characteristics of form. The weeks have one. I know there's lots of forms of living entities that don't have human forms. So this is like forms. My dear mother, the characteristics of form are understood by three things. Dimension, quality, and individuality. Dimension, quality, and individuality. So there's like diverse, and there's quality, guna, and there's dimension. The form of fire is appreciated by its effulgence. Let's hear what Prabhupada has to say about the purple. Every form that we appreciate has its particular dimensions and characteristics. Guna. Dimension. Guna. Like, you know, there's a table. When the developer was deciding to develop, you know, they considered, well, we want to market for people who have this kind of income or this kind of willingness. So there's this kind of tabletop or that kind of tabletop or that kind of tabletop, depending upon, you know, price tag, how many dollars per square foot for developing. So it can be like cheap quality or medium quality or really, really good quality. And becomes, you know, a different price tag. And not just tabletop, but all the other features. So there's dimensions and there's qualities of form. The quality of a particular object is appreciated by its utility. By the form, but the form of sound dependent. That's like connecting to something said earlier about sound. It's really nice. Read it. Go back and read it. It's text 30, I think it is. That sound develops everything, material and spiritual. So by spiritual sound, not only we awaken our dormant Krishna consciousness and cleanse things that are contaminating our consciousness, but all necessities of spiritual reality, spiritual existence, are made available through spiritual sound. I mean, spiritual form, and the whole, you know, everything, spiritual. All of our necessities spiritually come from spiritual sound. And at the same time, material sound does the same thing. Somebody is a tamagun person, and so they hear tamagun sounds, and they get their tamagun object. Through sound. So sound is like really important. So sound is independent. It's very, very fundamental for creation, spiritual and material. I mean, we use the spiritual creation not like once upon a time it didn't exist, but giving us access to that eternal reality is through spiritual sound. Okay. Forms which are invisible. Forms which are, so that the Sanskrit is rupa matrasya. Rupa matrasya. Subtle element of the subtle element form. What does that mean? So it's something like, it's something like Plato's idea of the realm of absolutes. Sorry for the philosophy, but that's what's going on here. Let's say he gives this example, long thing about absolute reality exists because before there's things of this world, there's the realm of absolutes. He gives the example of like all the thing about chair. So there's chair. And before there was a chair, there was an idea of a chair. Before there was an idea of a chair, there's this realm of absolutes where there's chairs. Otherwise, where did the idea of chair come from? From which the chair comes. philosophical position on there is a realm of absolutes. So similarly, there's this subtle feature of form before there's a gross feature of form. Thought comes before an action. Actions are gross, and there's a subtle feature of form. It's not just something within the mind, but there's a subtle feature of form. Oh, so let's see what Elsie says about that. Forms which are invisible can be understood only by touch. Like, you know, the movement of air. You can't understand the movement of air except, you know, the air blows. Oh. So it's not just the movement of air, but it's, according to Samkhya, it's a subtle feature of form. Well, you know, it's very complex, but subtle feature of form. Again, forms which are invisible can be understood only by touch, semicolon. That is the independent appreciation of the invisible form, period. Visible forms are understood by analytical study of their constitution. A tabletop, for example. The constitution of a certain object is appreciated by its internal action, for example, the form of salt. And this is speaking of the subtle. Now there's a, like, you know, a salt, what do we call it? Grain.
Mm-hmm.
Grain. There's the grain of salt, but then there's the subtle form of salt. For example, the form of salt is appreciated by its interaction of salty tastes. And the form of sugar is appreciated by its interaction of sweet tastes. Two examples. And because of that subtle form, it takes on a grosser form. I don't know, on a surface, here's a grain of salt, here's a grain of sugar. I can't tell the difference, but they're not the same. And it's not just like the, whatever you call it, crystalline structure of the two. The crystalline structure of the two is different, but what we're hearing is there's a subtle form that causes the grosser form that's different. So we have grosser forms that are different. But beneath or behind, in a causal sense of behind the grosser differences of form, there's a subtle difference of form. That's what's being taught here. Tastes, this is the last sentence. Tastes, like sweetness and saltiness, and qualitative constitution, you know, like what the crystalline looks like, are the basic principles in understanding the form of an object. So then we get like bigger object besides salt crystal or sugar crystal. If you want to build the universe, you've got to know this stuff. Brahma's very intelligent. You know, he's like, okay, I got it. And then he takes that knowledge and builds the universe. He assembles the universe. I want to just go to, I find it helpful, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. You can see Prabhupada is drawing from it. And of course, there's other commentators. But what they say about these three verses, what he says about these three verses, I find it helpful. So we're going back to the text 37. The distinctive qualities of air are its actions of moving, the branches of the tree, gathering, the leaves on the ground, conjunction, bringing things together, leading sense objects to the sense organ and giving life to the senses. Period. Here's his commentary. The characteristics of air are described. It provides movement. Air provides movement. As moving branches, as moving the branches of a tree, air provides movement. It causes association, as in bringing grass together. It causes cohesion of an object as one unit. Really important, you're going to have bodies and tables and, you know, and things. You have to have some cohesion. Air is that element. Okay? It brings the sense object, such as sound, coldness, or fragrance, to the organ, such as ear, skin, or nose. So this is, there's the big picture, and it's zooming into the more detailed picture. There's an ear, there's skin, and there's nose. Then there's tanmatra, the object of them. And to bring the two of the object and the sense together, air is evil, is what it's saying. If air movement is stopped, then you don't have sense perception. Although you have the object, you have the sense. It should be understood that movement, association, and bringing the sense object to the sense are all particular types of conjunction. And the word is prapti. So I'm familiar with prapti, we're familiar with prapti as this mystic city, obtaining something. So here's the yogi saying, you know, in Prabhupada's home, what would you like? A pomegranate from Afghanistan. By prapti city, there's pomegranate from Afghanistan. It's manipulating subtle laws of nature because they have some capacity for knowing the laws and some capacity for manipulating those laws. They don't do anything more than that. It's just material. Instead of going to Afghanistan and getting the pomegranate and bringing it, they do it this way, whatever that method is, prapti siddhi. But it's movement, association, and bringing sense object to the sense are all particular types of prapti or conjunction. There. Air brings life to all the senses. These actions of air are its distinctive features. Okay? So that's 38. You got air and things that air can do if you want to build the universe. From air, whose tanmatra is touch, its object is touch, or the sense that perceives the object. Under the influence of time, from air, whose tanmatra is touch, under the influence of time, arose form. Remember that one? There's the subtle thing, the capacity, now comes the form. But there's subtle form and gross form, both. From form arose fire. The eye perceives form because of the element fire. No purport. No commentary. Text 39. Oh, Devahuti, the qualities of form are providing shape, allowing perception through qualities and allowing perception of size. It is the tanmatra of fire. Commentary. The qualities of form are described. So previous is form, manifesting. Previous is the things that you need in order to manifest form. Now form is manifest, Here's the qualities of form. Cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Form provided shape for objects. It is perceived by secondary aspects or qualities of the object. Gunata. You know, like there's a tabletop, and so there's a certain hardness, there's a certain temperature, there's a certain color. There are various qualities. It is perceived, form is perceived by secondary aspects or qualities of the object. Sound is perceived independently. Again, that same message that I spent some time describing back in text 30. Form, however, is not independent of qualities for its perception. It allows perception for an object's size. It is the tanmatra of fire, Tejas Tvam. These are its qualities. The universe hasn't been assembled yet. It's just the automobile factory warehouse is being stocked with what's needed for Brahma to come along and build the universe. And, you know, the principles of interactions of this and that to build the universe. And build the universe means not just like, you know, the sky and the planet. It's all the, you know, micro and intermediate and macro details. It's sarga. It's one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam, and here it is. The necessary interactions. Of course, let's step back again a little bit. The teaching of Vyasadeva is sometimes characterized as, with the Sanskrit term Shakti Parinamavad. Parinama means transformation, and Vada means doctrine. The doctrine of transformation of energies. Impersonalists have another idea, no energies. All there is Brahman. Anything other than Brahman doesn't exist. That's it. End of story. And all we have to do to become realized impersonalists is just give it a bad name. It just doesn't exist. False. And put on it. I know. Vyasadeva says, no. But the energies, the particular configuration of energies is, on the material side, is ever-changing, but those energies are eternally energies of the energetic. And they're transformed in new complex ways, ultimately according to the sanction of the Supreme Lord, but then through the agents who he sanctions to make those arrangements for transformation. And then there's a living entity that's going along for the ride, thinking, this is me. Like, I'm going to get up and walk across the room. I'm going to do something. I'm going to make movement happen. But it's being carried out by neutral energy sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. The living entity, this isn't a zombie, it's not a non-entity. But it's not that we are creating those things. We're participants in a drama according to desire and according to deserve. Things happen by the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And that's like the material side, and then the spiritual side is we have an eternal relationship with the personality. So we can fulfill our duties over here while fixing our consciousness upon Krishna. And it's really easy to get distracted by, you know, the circumstances on the material side, and not only distracted, but identify with and suffer, or, you know, so-called enjoy the movements of the material energy, which are outside of our control. Although we wish we could control them a little bit more. It's outside of our control. A very, very, very complex machine made of material energy. Yantra Rudhan Maya. And this is giving some description of how the machine works. It gives the principles involved in machine working. It's just Krishna's energies being moved in different ways according to laws of cause and effect, overseen by superior authorities. It gives sanction to, you know, which machine part you get and how long it lasts and when it breaks. You know what you're supposed to do when it breaks. Okay. Sorry for the difficult subject matter, but there is a problem. Any questions? Yeah?
What about this Chayadevi singing as Pradhan?
Hmm?
Chayadevi singing as Pradhan?
Well, yes and no. I mean, all terms have their specific meaning, or they convey a specific import. So, yes and no. Yes. But, you know, Chayadevi is specific, and Pradhan is specific. So they refer to the same entity, but the reference is the name indicates the perspective or the point of reference that is being made. In Chayadevi, it goes along with what Bhaktisiddhanta calls the maidservant of the Madhavi, a co-wife who is, her role is to serve the primary wife. She served the Madhavi. She's the maidservant of the Madhavi. That's one of the co-wives. So, it has some specific connotation. Chayadevi.
Because when we hear about Pradhan, we hear in the context of undifferentiated energy as if inert, and then there is a person.
But she's a person. It's a state. So you can look at it in terms of energy, you can look at it in terms of person. Oh, whatever, you know, whatever.
So the three characteristics of calm that were mentioned, intelligence, quality and individuality, easier to understand both the dimension and the quality. But individuality, generally we hear in the context of having free will, or so I didn't follow, like, what does it mean by having individuality of a form?
I don't know if I understand it either. We'll go back to what, you know, what the Sanskrit is and see. Obviously it's a different meaning than free will. Let's see. Thank you. 31. Individuality is samstattvam, yakti samstattvam. And what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about yakti samstattvam is it allows perception for an object's size, yakti samstattvam. Form allows perception of an object's size. Although another one is dimension. Here, he's using shape. And then allowing perception of the object's size. Question balance for the shape and the head to be studied. Whether it's aspects of form, think of it that way. Individuality, perception of the size, so that the dolls look kind of the same, but they're different size. Whether it's shape and then there's the size. Anyway, that's the distinction being made. That's the sense of individuality. According to Vishwanath. Anything else? Anything
else? So, when we consider the air or the water or the salt, do we consider them as the material creations? Or what kind of creations are these?
I don't understand your question. It's certainly so material. Material as opposed to spiritual, or material as opposed to spiritual?
Yeah, because I'm still new to this. What we considered before is we considered Vayudeva, Agnideva, all of them as demigods. And are they considered as material or are they considered spiritual?
The agents of the Lord were in charge of the activities of those elements, and thus they're powered by the Lord to do that. So their potency is God-given, and it's in relation to the material creation. But the entity is a spiritual entity. The potency invested in them is from the Supreme Lord. So that sense, there's a spiritual aspect to it. But the activity, the service entrusted to them is governing some aspect of material creation, which is material. But the service of the Lord is spiritual, but the activity itself is material. Just like, things that we do with our Krishna consciousness. We may be dealing with, depends on our Krishna consciousness, we may be dealing with things of this world. But there's a kitchen, and there's some potatoes and carrots and things. So it's material, but depending upon the consciousness, it's devotional service to Krishna, offered to Krishna, and then it's spiritualized, depending upon our Krishna consciousness. So that's how we can transform material to spiritual by consciousness. And that is affected by sound.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question pertains to the origin of evil.
Origin of?
Evil.
Origin of evil. We know what that is.
Ugliness or anything bad. So, you mentioned about Plato's realm of absolutes, philosophical position. So,
does that mean that within Krishna is bad and ugly and evil?
Seems to imply that. But how is it treated within the Samkhya system? So it's easier to understand something like a chair, it has a certain...
It's neutral.
It has a spiritual basis to it, but something like evil or bad, how do we...
Well, it says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the same thing. I am da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He's, we can't get away from it. He's the source of everything. And there, you know, so there are things in this world that are evil or bad or ugly or hurtful or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the capacity for that and the sanction for that, two separate things, come from the Supreme Lord. It comes from, this is a tricky, it comes from the living entity having his free will and misusing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the capacity for his free will and the capacity to use misuse it is sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. So then he's responsible for the bad things that people do because he gave them free will and he sanctioned them to do that bad thing. And then get the karma for that bad thing and then become ugly or poor or, you know, maimed or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's responsible because he could have not given them free will. Or if they wanted to misuse the free will, just say no. So he's responsible. One could have that kind of thinking. We've had this discussion before, but we'll go down the path once again. There's no meaning to love without free will.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if there's free will, it can be misused, because it's free will, otherwise it's not free will. The nature of this material creation is illusory, or it's not real. It appears to be real, but it's not real. So that's there's a number of things, and this is just one of a number of things. But it's like a dream. In a dream, we can dream something awful. There's no substance to it. It's just a dream. Similarly, the bad things and the ugly things and the suffering things, it's like a dream. The operative element, however, is free will. That's not a dream. There's in harmony with, or in acting in a loving relationship with, and not. Now, from Uttama Bhagavat, they see everyone serving Krishna. Not to serving Krishna, you know, mean, vicious people are serving Krishna. They're serving in the wrong way, according to their free will choices, and taking the responsibility for that, according to, anyway. Ultimately, that's, you know, depending upon what level of consciousness or what the perspective from which you look at things, misuse of free will is serving in an inappropriate manner, but serving Krishna is never broken. It's eternally there. So that the bad is misuse of that free will. The capacity for that comes from the Supreme Lord. So it's not the bad thing, but the capacity for the bad thing. And the sanctioning is also there because there's free will. But with that sanction, there's also culpability. Just like you as a loving parent, they say, you know, to your child who wants to do something, insist on doing that something, and you keep correcting them, insist on doing that something. You want to impart a lesson to your son, that unwholesome thing is truly an unwholesome thing. You don't tie him up, you want to impart the lesson to him. It's an unwholesome thing. So you may sanction the unwholesome thing unwillingly. So it's not Krishna willingly celebrates when people with their souls misuse their free will. He wants to correct them so that the place of the house of correction is created. material world, where people do that thing and they suffer and so on.
My question specifically was, is there a particular element within the Sankhya system that brings about that ugliness? Like, is it contaminated consciousness, or what makes that appearance of ugliness?
Maybe in that it has to, are you speaking now specifically of form? It sounds like the term that's being used here is destiny. And destiny is the statement of controlling personalities overseeing karma. You know, so the controlling personalities control elements that create beauty or ugliness based upon the karma or the destiny of the living entity. It's not exactly, at least Sankhya-wise, doesn't sound like it's contaminated consciousness as much as it is rather the destiny of the living entity overseen by the controlling personalities,
okay,
overlooking the elements of creation. Or someone who can't, is paralyzed, or is unable, like a child. Their developmental stages don't work out. And they can't think properly or move properly. That's another ugliness. Misfortune. It has to do with dhyana. So they get particular.
But it doesn't have a counterpart in the absolute world. Like a handicap, for example. Or even things like the winter season, I don't know if it exists. Something that's harsh and lifeless.
Let me think about that. I mean, certainly there has to be a connection. You know, it's not like we experience.
It's maybe in some form, but
it's not like we experience. You know, the sense of separation from Krishna. The separation from Krishna can be experienced here in varieties of ways. It comes in form of hardship and difficulty and disability and so forth. What's the spiritual counterpart? The sense of feeling separate from Krishna, which in the spiritual world is ecstatic, but it appears to be suffering.
Because I've heard you say before that in the spiritual realm there is just the appearance of demons. There are no real.
And it simulates the sense of separation from Krishna. And you know, there's separation from, as you said, lifelessness, winter season, and atrophy. The spiritual counterpart. Let me contemplate and ask some devotees. But the sense of separation from Krishna has its counterpart here. Does that make sense to me? And then the diversity of it has to do with our circumstances. There's some places, like Prabhupada gives the example of the Eskimos, or the people that are born and live in deserts. It's harsh, very severe. It's a karma. So why does that condition or that condition exist? It's a karma. So what's the spiritual counterpart? Separation from Krishna. The sense of separation from Krishna, because there is no separation from Krishna. And here it's manifested according to Buddha and karma.
I had meaningless questions. Because sometimes the mind He's like, what about this? What about
your
this?
Your mind is really productive.
And then when I analyze, the final question is, what do I gain? What's the meaning of answering that question that mind
proposes?
And I concluded that.
Yeah.
Prabhupada, you are saying that the spiritual world, the absoluteness, the idea of chair or chair existed earlier than having a chair in this material world. So my question is that are the inanimate objects here are animate there, like you know, Krishna's rope is spiritual. Is
everything alive. Is conscious in the spiritual world. Everything is chit, conscious. And there, that chair or that rope or that Brahman thread or whatever it is that's used in Krishna's service is very happy to serve Krishna in that way, neutrality.
So it's like a soul serving that form.
Yeah.
That's exactly, I mean, soul serving in that form? I don't know. But certainly service in a conscious way. Souls are conscious. I don't know if that language is appropriate, but otherwise, yes.
Like, we have also heard from you, like, Uddhava wanted to become like dust in the spiritual world where, you know, the gopis would walk on, like that
grass.
Kind of expression.
Grass.
So grass and other, like, trees and other forms, they are souls, but the inanimate objects are conscious.
And you're making a statement, I don't know where you're going. Everything, let's go to the spiritual world, according to Chintani Prakrasadma Sukhalpa Vikshava Chavati. So everything in the spiritual world is chit. So let's just take the particles of dust. They're chit. They're Chintani. Even the dust, we'll just speak of the trees and the grass. There's no inanimate objects in the spiritual world. They're all animate. They're all conscious. And, it's a subtlety. There, in the description of rasa, the preliminary one is chanta, and then comes dasya. But so, if they're experiencing Krishna, are they experiencing serving Krishna? Because that's service, that's dasya. So some of the acharyas say that shanta is not to be included as one of the five rasas, as four rasas, because rasa means taste. And shanta is neutral, there's no with the taste. But others say, well, even in that shanta, there's some touch of service. Because that whole spiritual world is serving Krishna. So there's some touch of the sense of service. Okay. Tune in tomorrow for part two. We're going to do something else tomorrow. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.